Hi, this is Megan McHugh, and this is the podcast of Triple R Zero G, a weekly radio show exploring science fiction, fantasy, and historical. Zero G is broadcast live on Triple R from Melbourne, Australia, every Monday. Hope you enjoy the podcast, and feel free to get in touch with us via our Facebook page or the Triple R website.
G'day, g'day, g'day. Thanks to Natalie from Banksia. And welcome aboard the Starship Zero G, science fiction, fantasy, and historical radio for episode number 1581, entitled Amaze Grace. Our podcast title is Space Pod.
Nice.
I'm Rob Jan.
And Megan McHugh.
Wow.
Any guesses on what we might cover today?
Yes. Okay. So we're going to be talking about Project Hail Mary, the big new space science fiction film.
Much anticipated.
Yes. And also, speaking of space, I've been to, as a guest, the MSO Melbourne Symphony Orchestra Art of the Score, James Horner. We gave a heads up for that last week.
Yes.
And I think I've nailed another reason why I like these particular concerts, beyond it being iconic and fantastically well-played genre film music, which ain't nothing. I mean, you know, that's important.
Yeah.
There are the ones where they play a live score to the movie being screened, which have their place.
Yes.
And then ones like this one, where I can concentrate on the assorted selections from the scores and see exactly which instruments made which sounds, which for me is illuminating.
Yeah. Very horn-heavy, I noticed.
Yeah, well, you know, James
makes
Horner,
sense,
yeah.
But yeah, lots of use of horns and chorus.
Mm. Perhaps the most complicated piece was the suite from James Cameron's Aliens, with its lethal xenomorphic darkness pierced by the courage of Ripley and her doomed colonial marine escort. Mm. I looked for what was making the skittering sound in the music, you know, when associated with a scrambling, spidery facehuggers. And I was amazed to see that it was generated by the violinists quickly tapping their instrument strings with their bows.
Well, you were very locked in and looking at them.
Yeah, I wanted to see it all. And equally educational was an explanation and demonstration of Mr. Horner's, and others actually, repeated somewhat divisive use of a distinctive tritone that they dubbed the danger motif. Mm. You know, that's that. And you hear that across so many of his scores, it's sort of squeezed or expanded.
Yeah.
And having heard it there on the night in quick succession as the orchestra riffed across a number of those different selections from those scores, it reminded me of how much of a practically ubiquitous signature it was for Horner.
Yeah.
You know, and the controversy about it is he just being lazy? Or is this his way, his musical metaphor? Rather like that Star Trek Next Generation episode, Darmok, where they're speaking in metaphors. You know, like Horner at the orchestra when when the danger motif played. I was also happily reminded how magical choirs sound.
Yeah.
You know, because I don't get to hear a lot of choirs, and not live, and especially when they're singing a made-up language like the Na'vi songs from Avatar.
Yeah.
Oh, is that easier?
I'd say it's much harder.
Oh, you know, yeah, I mean, you can fudge the words. Sort of.
No one would know.
Like actors who do it when it's on set. Which it seems to me at least an impressive achievement that they can do that.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I thought it was a great concert, and I want to hear more.
Amazing.
Mm. And as I said, I was a guest of that performance. It's certainly a year for great big film trailers before Project Hail Mary. Oof. I saw trailers for The Mandalorian and Grogu.
Oh, that wasn't in front of mine.
Mm.
But
yeah. And Dune 3.
Dune 3, of course, yes.
And Chris Nolan's Odyssey.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And they all look like cheerfully epic, like sort of films. And for me, the whole Messiah thing in Dune goes horribly wrong in Dune 3. And it's the actual point of the Dune saga, I think.
Yes, it's going to be a bit of a left turn as compared to the first two movies, I think, in terms of the tone.
Yeah.
And, of course, you know, Paul Atreides' character himself.
Now, I will say that they did lean more into that. It's not a really good idea to follow a messianic figure in the two new films that we've just seen than in some of the other ones. But
yeah.
I think that's the one I'm up for. So I think there's room for another good Odyssey film as well.
I'm torn on this. People don't need to hear my rant about Nolan. I'm holding out hope that this will be an interesting adaptation. Yeah. I'm a little sick of Nolan's masculine stuff.
Of his shtick.
I mean, not that I need to see his take on, you know, like a woman going through menopause or something, but I want to see, I don't know, I just feel like his particular brand of filmmaking is so revered. I want there to be a bit more space for other things.
Well, there'll be so many women in this one. Penelope waiting patiently, or not, as the case may be. She's actually very clever. Cersei.
Yeah, I don't know if we'll see Cersei. That's true. I mean, I wonder what... I'm interested in it. Mm. I probably will see it. But me, I've got this whole thing with Nolan right now. It's a little unfair on him, I'll say, but I don't know.
The one I wanted to see was The Odyssey with Sean Bean's Odysseus from Troy. I would have liked to have seen that one.
Anyway.
And the success of The Mandalorian, it heartens me. Talk about a Hail Mando pass to restore the franchise. I mean, come on, how can you go wrong with a Sigourney Weaver in a Star Wars movie? Really? It just looks so good.
They've definitely tapped into what, you know, audiences want. I hope they can stick the landing.
Mm. All right. If not, the Beskar will protect them. Project Hail Mary. But let's hear a bit first from space, from James Horner. And this is the Bird of Prey, which is a Klingon warship, decloaking from Star Trek III, The Search for Spock. Hold my cloak.
This is Alistair Reynolds, creator of the Revelation Space series. Welcome aboard the Starship Zero.
Yeah, the Bird of Trey. The Bird of Trey decloaked there. Star Trek III, The Search for Spock, James Horner at the compositional helm there.
And we're going to stay in space and talk a little bit about Project Hail Mary, which has been a highly anticipated film by me and many others, which is an adaptation of Andy Weir's beloved book about a man who saves the world through friendship and science. So it is an adaptation of the book Project Hail Mary, which came out in 2021. And you may be familiar with Andy Weir's work previously. He also wrote the book The Martian, which was adapted into a film with Matt Damon.
And Artemis as well.
Yes, they're working on Artemis. They're working on the adaptation for that now. I believe the same directors have the rights for that, so...
Well, they haven't launched Artemis with a manned crew yet, so...
But stay tuned for Artemis. I think given the success of Project Hail Mary, I think there's a lot more support for getting that adaptation through. But anyway, this film is directed by Phil Lord and Christopher Miller. You may be familiar with them from their work directing Cloudy with a Chance of Meatballs.
Oh, I love that film.
The Lego Movie and the Spider-Verse, the animated... Into the Spider-Verse, across Beyond, etc. Yeah. Well, Beyond, I don't think we've got that. So here they are trying their hand with a live action, which they've done before, but their most well-known work does tend to be sort of animated. This one was written by Drew Goddard, very familiar with Goddard. Yes, he wrote for the TV shows Buffy, Angel, Alias, Lost. So just, you know, some of the key media from the 90s and early 2000s. Mm. He also wrote the films Cloverfield, the adaptation for World War Z, and he also did write the screenplay for The Martian adaptation too. So he also directed Cabin in the Woods, which is a top-tier horror satire.
It is.
Really good. So Project Hail Mary, where are we at with this? So plot, Ryland Grace wakes up aboard a ship, no memories, of course, alone, no idea why he's in space. Then bits start to come back. He starts to remember. He's a high school teacher, teaches science, I think middle school technically, but, you know, school-age children. Also, there's a bit of a conundrum because the Earth's sun is dying, threatening the human race. And somehow, despite him being just a high school teacher, he's ended up the solo astronaut left on a ship light years away from home on a mission to try to find a way to save the Earth. Mm. Of course, you know, he's Ryan Gosling. Ryland Grace is played by Ryan Gosling, and he's no ordinary science teacher. He was a former molecular biologist, and via some flashbacks, we do learn how he came to be roped into such a high-profile gig. We also meet the head of Project Hail Mary, which is sort of the name of the mission and the coordination to get this ship in space, a character called Eva Stratt, played by Sandra Hüller. And we also learn about the threat to the Earth, which is something called astrophage. It's a tiny microorganism, and it's slowly killing suns all across space, not just the one in our solar system.
Yes, it's not just Terra-centric.
No. So to avoid the imminent and extinction-level cooling of the Earth, which would occur in mere decades, thanks to this astrophage, they did form this mission, Project Hail Mary, to send a ship on a one-way trip to investigate why there's one particular sun,
Tau Ceti.
Why that particular sun and its planet, nearby planets, are not dying, are not under threat. Why that sun is still managing to survive with the astrophage, and this project is called Project Hail Mary. But of course, we can't just have this be our setup. Because Ryland Grace, he isn't alone in the patch of space that he's found himself in. There's actually another spaceship out there. And inside it, a character that we will come to know and love called Rocky. A little rock-like alien and exceptional engineer who will become the second half of an unlikely but iconic duo that team up to save their respective planets from the threat that is astrophage. Yeah, basically, Project Hail Mary is a feel-good movie that proves that an alien is just a friend you haven't met yet.
Hail Mary, of course, is a sports and reference. I had to look it up.
Did you look it up? But yes, it's like the last chance. It's a final, you know, punt, a last go, just really clutching your final hope. So needless to say, this movie does center quite a bit around Ryan Gosling's performance as Ryland Grace, as our key science teacher slash scientist slash astronaut. And it does prove that, yes, Ryan Gosling can lead a blockbuster movie. He carries this whole movie. They do have to sort of dress him up in woolen cardigans and give him a pair of glasses just so we understand that he's
a scientist.
You know, plausible that he's a scientist. He's a science teacher. Why does he have glasses, Rob? Why would you send someone to space? Like, if they have time to build a ship, they've got time to just give him a quick bit of laser eye surgery. Like, there is no reason why that man should be wearing glasses in space.
To be fair, there are reasons why they weren't going to send him.
Fair, you know,
so
fair.
That's part of the
plot.
Okay,
fine. But the glass, I'm like, okay, we're really just trying to hammer home that he's a nerd. But obviously the second part of our sort of heroic pair alongside Gosling, we do have James Ortiz, who plays the role of Rocky.
And is a puppeteer as well.
Exactly. So Ortiz does have a background as a puppet designer and a puppeteer. He's worked across theatre, opera and film. And it sort of just came about that eventually, not only doing the puppetry, he did the voice as well. It seemed that he really embodied Rocky. And so he does voice Rocky as well. And he's actually, one of five puppeteers. So there's like a little team that moves Rocky. And I do think the fact that Rocky is a real life puppet, that it's on
real
camera.
Life puppet.
Real life puppet. You know what I mean? He's not a CGI thing. He's not a tennis ball on a stick.
No.
Does add to this because obviously the core, the heart of this film is the Rocky Ryland Grace, the Ryan Gosling and James Ortiz pairing. And I'll just mention too, we're very light on cast on this one because we're pretty much, it's our two main characters. But we do also have really fabulous performance from Sandra Hüller playing Eva Stratt, who is the no-nonsense head of Project Hail Mary. She's kind of pulled this whole coordination together. She's formidable, as she was in the book. I think this is really great casting. Hüller is, of course, a decorated German actress. She had a really big year a couple of years ago. She was in both Anatomy of a Fall and The Zone of Interest, which were two of the best films of that year.
She has a special decoration in this too. I was reading this. It's an Easter egg. It's a tattoo that she's wearing, which basically translates. We see this in a scene afterwards. She's got a tattoo that translates as, "I've spent life in a French prison without parole." So after the mission launches, things happen on Earth. So
wow,
yeah,
gosh.
Decoration.
I know, she's wearing this tattoo. So let's hear a little bit from the score. The score's by Daniel Pemberton. Mm-hmm. Just to sort of get us a bit of a sense in the mood of the movie before we dig in a little bit more. This one is The Message from Project Hail Mary.
Hi, this is Corey McAbee from Stingray Sam and the American Astronaut, and you're listening to Zero G.
That was The Message from Project Hail Mary. It was composed by Daniel Pemberton, who has worked with directors Phil Lord and Christopher Miller on the Spider-Verse films, and he's a very prolific composer. He's worked on loads of films, a lot of TV work in his past. He's worked with a range of directors, and I think he actually has done the score for the drama, which is coming out, I think, this week as well. So he's like working, he's no shortage of jobs for Pemberton. And yeah, like I said, he's been a collaborator with Lord and Miller, the directors of Project Hail Mary, before. Really lovely score on that one as well. I think, you know, scoring a space film would be such a fun opportunity, but it has a lot of those little notes, because I think the main thing to mention about this film is it's good-hearted. I wouldn't say it's lighthearted, because obviously, you know, extinction is being put on the table and humanity is at risk. But at the core of it, it is meant to be a really enjoyable, feel-good film that you leave the cinema having really enjoyed your time, spending your time with the characters, you know, Grace and Rocky, and have gone on a ride, you've had an adventure, you've been in space, you've maybe learned a thing or two. And I think the score really captures that. There's a lot of, especially like the track we just played, The Message, these jaunty little moments as this story unfolds in space that just highlight, I think, the lightness with which the two directors could approach the material. Because I think one thing I noticed about the book was there's a lot of sort of science in it. It's very plot heavy, but, you know, Grace is a very funny character. There's a lot of comedic notes. And at the end of the day, it's a rollicking story that's about friendship and working together.
It belongs to a species of science fiction book and films, actually, that are upbeat, that are more positive. You know, we're talking Stephen Baxter, Alistair Reynolds. It's a whole bunch of writers who will give you that uplift. David Brin, for example, to coin a phrase, who just are able to give you the positive aspects of science fiction. Even, you know, Kim Stanley Robinson, even when he's writing about dire climate change, he will bring an angle to it where he's saying, well, yeah, we can do this.
Yeah, I think that's something that comes from Weir's source material as well, where it's like the possibilities of science and discovery and curiosity, because both Ryland Grace and the Martian, I can't remember the main character in The Martian, you know.
Mark, actually.
Mark, there you go. Part of the reason those stories work is that the main character just keeps trying things, is just pushes on, you know. I mean, there's parts of this film where Grace is really, you know, wallowing in a sense of self-pity, but he picks himself up and he just gets invested in solving these problems.
They reason their way out of situations.
Yes. And that cooperation, I think, is also a nice message, especially in these times where, you know, approaching something like coming across a strange blip in the middle of space, coming, you know, first contact with an alien species and approaching that with kind of good faith, I think it was really nice that this film captured that, I think.
It's interesting, isn't it? There's no indication given at all that the Hail Mary is armed.
Yeah, well, I think they say at one point specifically there's no shield, because there's a funny moment about the shields and things that there are none. It's a science ship, guys.
Shields. The ship does not have shields.
It's a science mission. And I think, you know, that's the spirit of those old expedition kind of films and stories where people are going out with a sense of discovery and there's not a maliciousness or any kind of some of those stories, Rob, just to be clear.
a lot of those stories did actually have a colonization or a military reason.
Let's say these are for the joys of science and discovery.
It's a thing. It's like, it's not trust in science, because that's a faith-based thing. It's not how it works. But, you know, it's better than making things up.
And I will say too, I don't want to make this about a book versus movie, but I do think in the book you do see the trial and error that goes into it, whereas in the film they do pare back a little bit on the science, because obviously it's a film, it's an adaptation, you don't have room for everything. And they do hone in on that relationship and building the connection between Rocky and Grace as the main core of the story. And I do think, despite missing some of the science stuff, that's the right choice.
Well, I endorse everything you've said. I felt, and I love the film too. Mm. I think it's one of the great science fiction space films ever made.
It's big. Big call, Rob.
Mm. It felt as if there'd been a lot, though. So, you know, you put it in the top 100.
We'll take as many as we can.
It felt as if they moved perhaps too much of the science and in the book into the background in favour of, in the film, foregrounding more sweet goofiness between Grace and Rocky, which I still loved.
Yeah.
But so there's more relationshipping than spaceshipping.
Yes, agree.
A book is a book. Movie's a movie. Mm-hmm. But there's science procedural left behind in the book that I think is pivotal and as interesting to me, at least, as deductive reasoning in a detective book.
Yeah.
So it's not just as convincing a science fiction story if you skate too quickly over it.
Yeah.
So I want the director's cut that's 3.5 hours long.
Totally. It's got all of that procedural in it.
But they did actually lean very deeply into the First Contact procedural.
Yes.
And that's a considerable positive offset bonus. So I'm nuanced in this, in this whole thing.
Yeah.
I'm not sure about the whole Grace wakes up with amnesia thingy. I mean, it's good to validate flashbacks as returning memories, but to me it seems pretty fraught with medical and mental complications. Would you really want to do that with a guy who you really need to be up there in good form?
Yeah.
I get it feels too much like seeing the bones of the story and the writer's decision in plain sight, whether it's the book or the film.
Yeah, I see what you're saying. Like, it's a convenient story device, but does it make a lot of sense? No.
Dramatically speaking, it works.
Yes, of course, because then you as well as Grace are starting to learn about the past. It's unfolding along for both, you know, audience and character. Mm. And I do think that's a lovely parallel. I agree. I totally agree with you, Robin, that a lot of what I loved about the book was that science procedural and the sense that we're going through it as well. And we're, you know, I felt like a little scientist myself, you know, reading all this stuff.
Yeah.
You get very embroiled. And there probably is a world where there's space to really expand more of the science stuff in the film.
Yeah, it's called a streaming television show.
Well, but I do also think honing in, because the chemistry between Rocky and Grace and Ryan Gosling and James Ortiz is top tier.
Yeah, absolutely.
And, you know, such a great chemistry between them, the way they work together as characters. Obviously, Rocky is a very, very lovable character, and that's what's going to make a blockbuster movie put butts on seats, to be honest. And I get it.
And actually a better engineer than Ryland Grace is.
Absolutely.
They show that. I know it's show, not tell. Mm. They really should have stopped and just said, oh, my God, you're a really good engineer.
Yeah, yeah. And I mean, I think this is a really amazing job at a tricky adaptation, though. Mm. Like, it had most of the core story beats that I wanted to see. There were some twists and turns in the book that were made more minor plot points in the film.
Yeah, or else left in the visuals.
Yes, yes, sort of just more of a background thing. Mm. But again, I think that I'm accepting that obviously trying to fit everything in. And it's already, I mean, this runs quite long. It's 2 hours, 36 minutes.
Didn't feel like it.
I did get a little bit, I wouldn't have minded if it was a bit shorter, but I don't see what I would have wanted to have cut out. So
I think that the omissions, sins of omission that they've committed are logical ones. I hate to say it, but they are logical.
Yes, yes, yes. What were your thoughts on Rocky in terms of from the book to screen?
Look, he looks great. He's got enormous character. For a blank-faced being, he's very convincingly realised, using a mostly live-action puppet-based sort of creation. Although I was amused to hear that they did a 3D print of him to get the to do the puppets and stuff.
You can print your own little Ryland Grace and there's all kinds of time.
There's some good merch.
Yeah, there's some great merch.
There's a helmet popcorn bucket and a Rocky popcorn sort of.
Oh, I
will watch you as you sleep, which isn't at all creepy when Rocky says it.
No, it's cute when Rocky says it. Yeah. There's some strong branding too for the Project Hail Mary stuff. Like
it's all over the place.
Like very cool retro. You know, because Ryland Grace's character is kind of sort of, I think it's meant to be set now, but he feels to me very 90s, early 2000s.
His character is interesting. Like, he's clearly a bit of a loner.
Mm.
He loves teaching kids. Mm. He seems to push people away from him too.
Yeah, yeah. I think in the book he's actually a little more silly than he is in the film. I think Ryan Gosling does capture the jokiness and the glibness and the silliness. But I do think in the book I felt he was, I don't know, pushed more for comedy, whereas Ryan pulled back a bit and went a little more dramatic.
The character has to cover an awful lot of light years before he can finally find friendship.
Yeah, but he found it.
Something wrong with you, Ryland. But he did, yes.
And needless to say, I think I did mention this before, like, Gosling does hold this movie together. Like, he's in most scenes and, you know, I've considered him a leading man for a long time. But when you look back, you know, he hasn't really led a big film like this before. He obviously can do it. And the shots of him in the pilot seat in uniform, I was, like, getting hyped for Starfighter because he looks good in a pilot seat. So it did make me think, okay, Starfighter, I can see the vision. Let's get that movie made and out.
I could see other people doing this role. I mean, I could see Sam Rockwell would just nail this so easily.
But that's because we've seen Moon and he's done the loner in a spaceship before.
Yeah, okay.
He would be more goofy with it too, I think. Sam Rockwell. Yeah,
all right.
Not that Gosling can't go goofy, but...
But it's when you think about it, it's a tour de force to carry this whole movie.
Absolutely. With a puppet.
With a puppet.
Yeah. And he does it beautifully.
Why did you pick this next track,
Moon? Oh, yeah. So this is also from the soundtrack. There's a few needle drops in the film.
And here's a needle drop.
This is a needle drop. Exactly. Mm. Neil Diamond, to be specific. And this is the very fittingly titled Stargazer from Project Hail Mary.
Hi, this is Bear McCreary. And you're listening to Zero G.
Neil Diamond, Stargazer. Mm. And we played that because we are talking about Project Hail Mary, the latest blockbuster that's out in cinemas now, directed by Phil Lord and Christopher Miller. Very well received by both us here on Zero G and I think audiences at large. I think people are loving it because, like I said before, it is a really feel-good spectacle, though. It's big. It's a capital M movie. But at the end of the day, it's just... a hell of a time. It's really enjoyable.
I saw it as a guest of IMAX.
Oh, yes. Tell me about how it was on IMAX. I saw it on a piddly small screen.
Even though it's not in 3D, I thought that
bonus for me, honestly.
The ginormous screen really was evocative of the space scenes.
Yeah.
Really gave you that sense of
the scale.
The vastness of space. Rendering the spacewalks genuinely vertiginous. Amaze, amaze, amaze. Something I was chuffed by. The bottom of the IMAX screen is sunken in a pit at the front of the cinema, don't go running down to the screen at the end of the movie because you're gonna do a roadrunner or a coyote. And there are industrial safety rails edging it, which fit right into the interior spaceship scenes, an unintended 3D sort of look or a foreground miniature. So I thought that was that didn't distract from the performance. I thought I'm the ship.
Yeah. And also, as a mention to the production design, I think it is tricky to design a space like the ship, the Hail Mary, and have it be a space where you can fit all of the action that's happening, and then eventually we do get Rocky on the ship as well, and having it all make sense and feel a little bit cluttered and chaotic without actually seeming it and making it difficult to watch. I do think the design on this for everything, including costumes, Rocky's design as well, really, really good. I don't think I had anything particularly pictured when I read the book, but when I saw this, I was like, that's it. It captures the essence and looks great.
The Mary spaceship is pretty sweet, and it strongly reflects the design in the book in general because there's a diagram in the book showing the layout of the ship. All the exterior space scenes are splendid, and the interiors, they do look perfect for that. You know, the detail in that is enormously well done.
Yeah.
So, you know, I just thought all of that stuff, no problem at all.
Big tick.
I love the idea that the Mary has a volume-like LED screen.
Yeah.
A room in a room as a sort of a, you know, play a holodeck almost for immersive recreation, mostly seen as Earth environments, which, of course, is what you'd be wanting on a long journey. And I like the fact that they kept the exterior scene soundless because, you know, in space no one can hear rookie astronaut Ryan Gosling throw up in his suit. The suits were good too. I really liked the suits.
Looked good. Yeah. Yeah, the suits looked really good. Mm. And I do think it did capture enough of that peril of, you know, whenever you see someone in a spacesuit on the exterior of his ship with their little sort of guide rope clipped on, you need just enough sense of danger, just enough peril. And I think they balanced that well without it making it, oh, this is an action film. It was just those little hints of action here and there.
Yeah, it did make me wonder why one stage Ryan actually has to do a spacewalk. Why don't they just wait till they're out of the peril and then do it afterwards? But there's a reason in the book for that. And, yeah. You know, so I guess we're just working off that. But yeah, look, I, you know, in the zero G thing of yeah, nah, maybe in our reviews sort of parameters, I go for this, you know, I can't do it in Rocky's voice, but yeah, yeah, yeah. You know.
Yeah, statement.
Or as the Beatles would say. There's a lot of pop culture references in it too. That Shields Up one had me cackling.
That was one of the better lines, and I'm sorry if we've ruined it for you all now, but I think it's a really clever script. It's visually, it looks fantastic. I think the pace of it, the joy of it, and at the end of the day, it's just really great character, like character, I've forgotten the word. Development. There we go. Really great character development that fit really well with what I was expecting from the book and exceeded it, to be honest. I do think I enjoyed seeing the relationship between Grace and Rocky play out on screen even more than I had in the book.
Yeah.
And you really felt it. Like, there's certain scenes, which I obviously won't ruin, but, you know, I saw it in the cinema. I think it's a perfect movie to see at the cinema, and I encourage you to do so if you can. You know, there's a couple of minor peril scenes where, you know, you felt the room, you know. We were like, oh, my goodness. And, you know, it's never really true high peaks of danger or low troughs of sadness. It's sort of a midline mainstream blockbuster see with the family kind of peril, but it still was such a good ride, and I thought that, I don't know, if this is what the kind of movies we're going to be churning out as our blockbusters, I really want to see more like this.
They talk about it as a franchise buster because it's just by itself, but really it's in the Weirverse.
Yeah, well, this is it. I'm like, what are you talking about? It's an adaptation as well, but a beautifully done one. I think everyone here understood what that book was about and why people love that book so much.
They knew the mission.
They did, and a mission accomplished. So, yeah, Project Hail Mary, I think definite two thumbs down, Rocky style from us, I guess, which is two thumbs up, of course.
Yes,
and highly recommend for a couple of really fun hours of the movies.
And as the sound system at IMAX was really cranked up, and it was, you could feel it rumbling. I love that.
The ambient space. Yeah, yeah.
And then suddenly you get that silence when you're outside, and I thought, I felt that.
Yeah. I do also think the holodeck-type room you mentioned is a really great example of how you take something from the book, which was basically that they had a laptop with all of human knowledge on it, and you transpose that concept into something visual for movies. Just little things, like little details like that, I think it shows, you know, really good understanding of what should be adapted and how.
It's very referential to the Beatles. And I have if you're going to use a Beatles song, why would you not use Let It Be?
Why would you not?
Yeah, with its spot on lyric about Mother Mary comes, you know, why not? There's probably perhaps a thousand or a million dollar reason for that, but I can fix that now because I've got Let It Be with Paul McCartney doing the 1985 Live Aid concert at Wembley. And this also serves as our Bowie of the week because Bowie comes on stage and sings with them along with other stars who are there. So, you know, this is Paul McCartney and David Bowie eventually. Let It Be.
This is Peter Woodward. I play the technomage Galen in Babylon 5 and Crusade. And you are listening to Zero G. Who do you serve and who do you trust?
We had Let It Be there, in case you didn't get that after all of that.
In case you didn't recognise that tune.
At the Live Aid in 1985, when we played that, because they should have played that in Project Hail Mary, especially with the Bowie coming in there too.
I know.
You really heard him when he sat in there. All right, Melbourne International Comedy Festival, 25th to 19th of March to 19th of April.
It's kicked off.
It kicked off. We did an interview the other week about one of these shows. Mm-hmm. All right, breaking it down. Fantasy, a bit of a festival theme where vampires drool okay. one for the 1990s pop culture fans, Buffy Revamped, created by Brendan Murphy but performed by Jacob Jackson. All 140 episodes of the day of the show retold from the skewed perspective of everyone's favourite vampire with a microchip conscience instead of a soul, Spike. And Rhiannon McCall, speaking of vampires, is Nosferatu looking for love, which is an ancient vampire trying to break into show business. Oh. And more vampirism, Sean McAuliffe is having a book launch of called Death Takes a Holiday, which is about the Count Death on a grand tour. We also have Swampolesque 2, which is a burlesque dragon circus show, which will have you Shrekking, not Max Shrekking. D&D, Dice, Paper, Roll and Friends, which is hard to say, but I did it, which is a quest through improv dungeons as special guest comedians misadventure through the comedic structure provided by the Dungeon Master and Ensemble.
Nice.
Evil Dead the Musical, exactly what you hope and fear it will be. I'm hearing good things about this. There is an audience splatter zone, so perhaps dress appropriately. In the historical vein, we have A.J. Lamarck's Excavating a Beginner's Guide to Ancient Egypt. Ooh. We also have Shit-Faced Shakespeare, Hamlet, which is a, you know, drunken barder, hidden master. Innes Lloyd with their Holmes Unbound, The Lost Casebook of Sherlock Holmes, stories that were merely mentioned by Holmes and Watson in the Conan Doyle stories, but now three of them are brought live onto stage. In the science fiction vein, we have More Space, Leno and Woodley in space, signature physical comedy and beloved bickering banter with no hope of being controlled by Mission Control. Lucas Mentees does B48Y, which crash lands on Earth. A UFO crashes into a gay nightclub in Collingwood where the occupant of this interplanetary craft asks what it is to be human. More eponymous space comedy with Raoul Morispoli, where you may learn some astrophysics along with the laughs during a comic space flight. I love those shows where science is mixed with comedy. And then there's one bubble show in space, technically a children's show. It's what it says on the tin. It will contain ginormous bubbles.
Wow.
I cannot think of anything more appropriate for adults at the moment. There's Biff to the Future, in a time where we're living the dream of a meathead in charge of the planet. Joseph Maudsley gives us the beloved Back to the Future trilogy seen through the little beady bully eyes of the villainous buffoon Biff Tanner. And speaking of time travel, there's Coco the Time Travelling Tart, who channels Doctor Who by way of the Mighty Boosh. apparently an influencer with 30-plus video views on their Instagram and TikTok channel. And Esty Danellis takes the Metal Mickey out of AI with their show, Artificially Intelligent, which details the problematic difficulties of having ChatGPT write a comedy show. There's a miscellaneous one which I could not categorise, but which I love the idea of IKEA Wars, which is a game show. We have to build a flat pack with sabotage.
Oh my gosh. I love that.
That is all at the Melbourne International Comedy Festival running now until the 19th of April.
Nice.
I actually like the way they organised the website this year. It helped a lot.
Yes, you can head along to www.comedyfestival.com.au for info on shows and then links or ability to buy tickets.
Mm-hmm. All right, well, that's about it for Zero G for today. We are going to go out with another track from Mr. Bowie, this time full track.
Mm-hmm.
It is actually a Beatles song. It's Cross the Universe from the album of the same name. And it is actually one of the Beatles doing background backing it in this one. So, yeah, I thought we'd get more Beatles stuff in as well as Bowie. How can you go wrong with that? All right, until next week, we'll have Easter coming up next week.
Yes, indeed.
Thank you, Megan.
Thank you, Rob.
And Joe Brunatic coming up next with Astral Glamour.
G'day, this is Rob Jan. Thanks for listening to the podcast of Triple R Zero G, a weekly radio show exploring science fiction, fantasy and historical. Zero G is broadcast live on Triple R from Melbourne, Australia every Monday. Hope you enjoy the podcast and feel free to get in touch with us via our Facebook page or the Triple R website.